The views expressed on X96's Radio from Hell show are not necessarily the views of Simmons Media, its management, and owners.
This program is intended for mature audiences. Parental discretion is advised.
KXRK, Provo, Ogden, Salt Lake City. Radio from Hell with Carrie, Bill, and Gina on X96.
Good evening, Quahog. I'm Tom Tucker. Our top story tonight, in a shocking turn of events, the city of Detroit has officially given up. The now former mayor has given the key to the city back to the Huron Indian tribe. So farewell, Detroit. From Bob Seger to Axel Foley, we never really cared. Joyce?
Thanks, Tom. In local news...
This is Radio from Hell on X96.
Sponsor?
Yes, Ask Gov brought to you by asking an expert how to save money on your auto, RV, or home loan. Ask Granite Credit Union. Go to granite.org.
Oh, who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood, in your neighborhood. Say, who are the people in your neighborhood? The people that you meet each day. Well, they're the people that you meet
when you're walking down the street.
They're the people that you meet each day.
Boom. And you might meet... It might smell yeasty around their house.
Well, now that's that could be a myth we need to dispel or say it's busted. It's not a myth.
It might be your neighbor might be a home brewer, and you might want to call the cops on him.
No.
No?
No. Okay. No. It's not illegal to brew beer at home.
We have Ross.
Me.
Is this just a first name thing? You don't want to...
Sure. Ross Metzger.
And Cody.
Cody McKendrick.
Need to go right up in
into the microphone, right. Folks. You're brewers, not broadcasters.
True.
We understand that.
The first time.
So okay. Anyone can brew beer.
Absolutely. Anybody who likes beer and wants to spend a little bit of time, you can absolutely do it at home. It's really easy to do.
You know, there's all kinds of beer at the store, all different flavors and styles.
Including Radio from Hell, Red as Hell Ale.
I was going to say.
At the liquor store.
But I'm wondering what you look at all that and think, yeah, I think I'll make my own. What is it about making it that's the difference?
Why go to the trouble is what Gina is asking.
Because I never go to the trouble.
Well, I think for a lot of reasons. A lot of people like to make, you know, exactly the beer they like to drink. You know, maybe they want a really hoppy stout or a light pale with a certain type of hop character that they can't get at the store. And also brewing at home allows you to control the amount of alcohol in it. So you can brew a beer that's not limited to 4.0%, which is what we can get at the store here. You can make it 8%, 10%, you know, whatever. You really have an infinite number of variables you can control to make exactly the beer you want to make.
But can you sell it?
You can't sell it, but you can drink it, which is the most important part.
Is there a limit to how much you can have on hand?
There is. They passed the law a couple years ago, and the rule is 100 gallons per person per household with a maximum of 200 gallons per household.
Hold on.
That's an awful lot of beer.
100 gallons per person per household.
Yeah, with a maximum...
Of legal drinking age, right? So you couldn't say, I have 100 gallons for my 8-year-old.
Sure, well, you could say that. I'm not sure they'd let you get away with it.
They wouldn't, okay. So 100 gallons per person per household.
You can say anything you want.
Still, that's a lot of damn beer.
It's quite a bit of beer.
Per person.
Absolutely, but, you know, people that don't go out and buy beer, they make it at home, and, you know, that's... They can go through that much beer pretty quick if you hang out and entertain guests and have Super Bowl parties and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is it legal to give it to people?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's kind of a gray area, I think. You're not supposed to transport it. But I think a home brewer giving a few beers to a friend isn't going to be on any police officer's radar. You know, it's just it's one of those things.
Unless it's really good.
If
really
they're giving
good
you,
stuff.
Party at your house.
Yeah, there's always plenty of beer at my house.
So take us through the steps. First of all, you just decided I'm going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're just getting into it green and you haven't experienced anything, you'd come into, you know, a shop like ours. There's a couple others in the valley. And
What's your shop? Go ahead and plug it.
Salt City Brew Supply. Excuse me. I didn't know if we were or we're not supposed to do
that.
That's
okay.
Yeah, you just ask questions. It's pretty simple to do. You know, the beginner brewer probably is going to spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours in their first day, and they'll make a huge mess in their kitchen, you know, as they try and figure things out. But once they get it finished, it's probably, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before it's in a bottle, another 2 or 3 weeks from there, and it's drinkable.
Do you teach them at your store how to do it if they've never done it before?
Absolutely. We do a class about every month for beginners, and then next week we're going to do some advanced homebrewing sessions at our store. We're going to do a demonstration of an all-grain technique.
And what kind of beer do you guys have? Because I'm into, like, the strawberry, peach.
The girly beers?
The girly beers. I like Guinness, but, you know...
Well, we have all kinds of kits at our store that's easy to get into. It gives you step-by-step instructions on how to get started, how to ferment the beer and everything. And in those instructions, you can also add... Changing the microphone around here.
It doesn't want to stay up.
It won't go up.
It's drunk.
But brewing beer, is it like a male-dominated thing, would you say?
It's getting less and less that way, I think. And there's all kinds of ingredients you can add to your beer when you're in charge of doing it yourself at home. And you can add strawberry or raspberry or anything you want, real fruit or extract, and get into any kind of variations you'd like.
So walk me through this. How do I start? I put the water in the bathtub, right? I fill the bathtub up with water.
Well, that's kind of the old misconception. You know, a lot of people saw their grandpa or whatever 20, 30, 40 years ago making beer in their bathtub or whatever it might have been. It really wasn't being made in the bathtub, so that would be totally unsanitary. But
I have a very clean tub, sir.
You know, for most beginner brewers, you start with some steeping grains. You'll steep them in a gallon of water or so, kind of like you're making a big cup of tea.
Steeping grains. Now, what is that?
So steeping grains are specialty malts, malted barley, malted wheat sometimes. They have different colors and flavors and aromas, and they're going to give the beer a unique color and flavor and aroma.
So you let that soak for a while.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You let it sit in roughly a gallon of water. It's not that particular. For probably 30, 45 minutes. You'll pull those grains out, and then you're going to add some water to your kettle and bring it to a boil.
Okay.
Once you're at your boil...
We're making about a gallon or two right now?
Well, the boil will probably be... It depends on how big your pot is, but usually 2 or 3 gallons for most beginner brewers.
All right.
And then you'll add some extract to it, which is going to be it's an extract made from malted barley. Okay. That's going to be the majority of your fermentable sugar. And once you're boiling, you'll boil for about an hour. And then during that hour period, you're going to add hops. And when and how much you add of the hops is going to dictate how the beer turns out.
Now, hops are?
Hops are what gives bitterness and hop flavor and aroma. It's a plant that was discovered, centuries ago that had preservative qualities to beer. It was the only thing they could figure out that would help the beer not spoil as they stored it long term. And so it just over centuries and centuries, it became a staple part of beer. And if a beer without hops wouldn't taste very good at all. It'd be... more like a malt beverage or like a wine cooler type thing.
There, you'd like that.
That's what you'd like.
Yes, wine coolers.
Yes, you could put strawberries instead of hops, and it might be...
You just throw chunks of strawberries in there? Or is that, I mean, they're...
Well, if you wanted to do fruit, you'd probably do it in a secondary fermentation. After the main part of fermentation is finished, you'll add the fruit into a secondary and let the fermentation take some of the fruit sugars.
Okay, so we boiled for an hour. We put the hops in.
Absolutely.
Then what do we do?
Then you want to cool it down as quickly as possible.
Oh, stick it in the snowbank. Okay.
Yeah, you can do that, but there's faster ways to go about it. The fastest is using an immersion chiller, which looks kind of like a copper coil. Some people mistake it for a part of a still, but it takes heat out of the boil.
Well, that's cool.
Other people will put it into a sink full of ice water, an immersion bath.
That's good, too?
Yep, absolutely. Right. The object is to keep it get as cool as possible. We've got to get it below 80 degrees.
Below 80 as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
All right, so then what?
After you're below 80 degrees, you transfer it to a fermenter. You'll top your water up to about 5 1/4 gallons, 5 1/4. And then as long as you're below 80 degrees, you can pitch your yeast.
A fermenter would be like a big tank of some kind, right?
Yeah, most people use food-grade buckets, 6 1/2 gallon food-grade buckets. There's also glass carboys. They look like water tower jugs, but they're made of glass. There's a few different things you can use. But you just want it to be food-grade and airtight because you want to be able to keep air from getting in and then use an airlock to allow CO2 to escape.
Oh, okay. All right.
You don't have an explosion?
It'll explode.
Because it could be dangerous, right?
I've never had an explosion. Ross has had a fermenter go before.
That makes a mess, but nobody was injured.
You hear of all kinds of stories. People that do fruit in secondary, if you do it in a carboy, it can clog the neck and build up enough pressure until it makes a fruit cannon.
Fruit cannon?
See? That's my new band name, by the way.
Fruit cannon.
The girl beer. It's dangerous.
It's a disco band, Fruit Cannon.
We've already actually trademarked that, so.
Oh, damn. All right.
801-359-9696 or 1-877-602-9696 if you have questions.
So we put it in the fermenter, and then we put the yeast in?
Absolutely, yeah. You put the yeast, pitch the yeast onto it.
And you just let it sit?
You'll seal it off, put an airlock in it so CO2 can escape and oxygen can't get in. But most ales will ferment, at room temperature 60 to 70 degrees or so.
Okay.
So you put it in a basement, cellar, corner, closet, bathroom, wherever, and just let it sit for, a couple weeks.
Couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then open it up, drain all the solid stuff off. Do you put it in a strainer, I guess?
No, what you'll do is a lot of the sediment will have fallen out. A lot of the yeast and the larger, proteins and whatnot will have fallen out to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to disturb that, so you want to siphon it off of that cake of sediment at the bottom as gently as possible into another vessel. Some people use soda kegs, but more commonly you bottle, and you'll mix in a measured amount of sugar. Because at that point, all the fermentable sugar is gone. The yeast has already consumed it.
Oh, okay.
So you add in a measurable amount of sugar, and then you'll put it into bottles and cap it, and the yeast will consume the sugar in the bottles, and that's what carbonates it.
That's what makes it bubbly. Okay.
Yeah.
It's really almost frighteningly easy.
It absolutely is. It sounds more complicated when people get caught up with the vocabulary and different terms like that, but the process itself is super easy. Once people have seen it, they go, oh, wow, this is stupid.
Because as you were going through all of the instructions, because I've always wondered step by step, because, I mean, you know, we've been brewing beer as human beings for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Thousands? Yeah, absolutely.
Hundreds. Hundreds of years.
Many hundreds.
I bet the Assyrians have been doing it for...
You started it.
Because as you were doing that, I was thinking, you know, in my 12-year-old boy was at home going, okay, then you do what? And writing it all down. I'm going to make beer because it's easy. It really is remarkably easy to make beer. But then you get into the subtle stuff, the flavoring. That's when it becomes complicated. And that's when it becomes a science, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of science in it. And there's all sorts of brewers out there. There's engineers and chemists that like to really get into the details and some of the variables. And then there's people... You know, just like anybody else, I like to sit at home on a Sunday afternoon, watch TV, make some beer, and make it pretty easy on themselves. But it's a hobby for everybody, for sure.
Well, that's kind of what Shane's question is, kind of about how to do different styles of beer.
We do have a full bank of phones, so we'll get to that coming up. We got to take a break right now, and we got to talk about the Salt Lake Film Society. But ask a home brewer, it's easy and it's legal. Contrary to what you might think. 801-359-9696 in Salt Lake, everywhere else. 877-602-9696. You can text your question to 53318. Put X96 first thing in the message, and then your question. Send it to 53318.
Oh, yeah. Can you dig it, baby? If maximizing your lovemaking is priority numero uno, It's Black Velvet time, baby. Black Velvet Boutique has naughty toys, novelties, adult films, lingerie, etc.
It feels good.
Take advantage of Black Velvet Boutique's sexy Sunday sale every Sunday with 25% off and buy one get one adult films. Black Velvet Boutique, 293 South State in Clearview. Online at blackvelvetboutique.com.
X96, everything alternative. Radio from Hell in the morning. X96.
A chilling story from a Chinese zoo. A baby langur monkey ate a peanut thrown by a zoo visitor, and since the monkey didn't have grinding teeth yet to break the peanut down, it got lodged in his intestine. That is a life-threatening situation. So obviously there was only one thing to do. A zookeeper had to lick the monkey's butt for an hour until it pooped the peanut out. Which brings me to threat number one, manipulative sicko monkey. According to the report, the zookeeper had no option but to resort to this treatment because the monkey was too small for medicine. And apparently too small for a sponge, a moist towel, a Q-tip, a damp finger, a wet leaf, anything. It had to be man tongue. Nation, a zoo is nothing but monkey prison, which means this monkey has made this zookeeper his bitch. And sure, the little monkey is fine now, but tomorrow you know it'll be, oops, I swallowed another peanut. I'm so clumsy. Whatever shall we do?
Radio from Hell on X96.
I could have gone forever and not heard that.
It's a true story.
Fine.
You need to be aware of the manipulative monkey.
Manipulated. Like he said, there are any number of other options he could have used.
That man was a professional zookeeper. He knew better. See, he was manipulated by a monkey. You gotta watch. That's why these stories are important.
Thank you.
All right.
Question mark? ASCA, brought to you by the Utah Arts Festival, June 21st through the 24th at Library Square, downtown Salt Lake. Get tickets and information online at uaf.org.
Oh. All right. It's Ask a Home Brewer.
Who are
And these guys are here, Ross and Cody. What's the store again? Salt City Brew Supply?
Salt City Brew Supply. We're on 7200 South, 750 East.
Thank you for wearing a shirt with your logo.
That's helpful.
So I can remember.
Nineveh Dinha, still here with us.
Hello.
Helping out. Our fill-in Bill for today. His trek to Nepal starts today. And we've got tons of phone calls.
A lot of people calling in wanting to know about brewing beer. And I've got a couple of legal questions I want to get to coming up. Shane, go ahead, Shane. Ask a home brewer.
Hey, guys. Hi, first of all, thanks for letting me listen.
Thank you.
Hey, I'll try and word this as easy or as sensible as I can. Me and my sister were drunk one night doing a real classy beer tasting thing and decided to Google the difference between beers and or lager and ale. I thought I remembered reading something about one has a yeast that rises, one has a yeast that sets, and one's brewed hot, cold. I just kind of wondered the difference between brewing a lager versus
he can't remember
ale.
Because he was drunk. So could you?
He's sober now. Yep, could you say that now?
He's paying attention. The difference between a lager and an ale.
Lots of the best beers start that way. You don't even remember what happened because you were drinking the whole time. But a lager and an ale, they are different. Lagers ferment cool, typically 48 to 54 degrees. Ales ferment warm. Like I said, probably 60 to 70. Room temperature is pretty common for that. As far as the yeast, the ales typically have top cropping yeast and lagers are bottom cropping yeast. So the yeast kind of hangs out at the top or bottom depending on the beer style.
Okay.
But it's kind of a gray area. There's some yeasts that don't perform exactly to that. And there's some that are kind of in the middle. So it's not necessarily just because you see a yeast in one place in a fermenter doesn't necessarily make it that type of yeast. There's kind of a whole gray area in the middle.
Is the taste different?
Yeah, absolutely. Lagers, you know, because they go through, they're cold fermented and they go through a lagering process, which is cold aging, mm-hmm. they tend to be smoother and cleaner and crisper. Ales have a little more character to them as a general rule. But I mean, as a home brewer, you can manipulate that and do whatever you want and really control exactly what the end beer is going to be.
You're playing beer god is
beer
what
god.
You're doing.
Absolutely.
There you go. Here you go, Shane. Thank you very much. Let's go to Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Gary, Gina.
Yes.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Hi.
Coming into work.
What?
All right. Have you had a couple of beers already?
I think he has.
Well, I have not.
He wants to know if you could go to his home and teach him how to do it. Do you do in-home classes?
You know, we haven't thought about doing in-home classes, but it may not be a bad idea.
I think it might be a terrible idea.
No, I think it's good because that guy should not leave his house.
No.
Do background checks before we go, obviously.
Dude, I can't hear you either. You were on a bicycle or something.
I can't drive anymore because I lost my license.
Here's Ryan. Ryan, ask a home brewer.
Hey, I was wondering how much would a starting home brewer spend on their first batch.
Okay, so Ryan's getting started. What sort of an investment is he looking at here?
Yeah, the basic equipment is pretty inexpensive. You're probably looking about, you know, $75 to $150. You need some basic, you know, fermenting and siphoning equipment. The one expensive piece that some people can get away without buying is a kettle, which because most people have that at home in their kitchen already.
Yeah.
So you need to have a kettle. It's at least 3 gallons, 12 quarts, and then, you know, another $75 to $125. You can get all the equipment. Per batch, you're anywhere from $20 to $50 for a 5 gallon batch, and that's roughly 50 bottles. So it comes out to, you know, 40 cents to maybe a dollar a bottle, which is pretty inexpensive in the long run.
See, that's what I was going to ask you, was for the math. Is it just cheaper to go buy a beer in the store or make it yourself?
It can go either way. These days, you can get quite a few good beers, and we're lucky that we have a lot of really good brewers locally, mm-hmm. Or breweries rather, and so you can get good beer here. But if you're, you know, if you brew often enough and regular enough and you're efficient enough with your processes, you can get, you know, batches of beer down to, you know, 15 cents a bottle, which
is
hard to
beat. But I get that that's not why you're doing it. You're not doing it because, you know, beer's too expensive. I'm going to make my own.
Well, some people do. You know, so if you go to the liquor store and buy a, you know, Ready from Hell or a, you know, a really nice beer, it could be 8, 10, 12, 15 bucks sometimes. And
Radio from Hell's $3.99.
Oh,
it's very affordable.
Here's what I want to know. We were talking about alcohol content, right?
Yes.
So we get non-alcohol beer. You can brew that, right?
It's a little more difficult, especially on the home brewing level. The type of technique and equipment needed to take the alcohol out of a beer isn't really available to home brewers. You could brew something with very low alcohol, you know, 1 or 2%.
So sort of like, why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother? What do you want, a Nineveh?
Good Lord. You can buy apple juice.
No, here's my real question. Here's my real question. That was just on behalf of somebody else, yeah. I think, on the message board had asked about. But what's the highest percentage of alcohol beer that you can brew at home?
Well, the most beer yeast is tolerant to, 12, 13, 14%. So, with some special care, you can get a beer up to that level.
But what does it taste like?
It depends. Most higher alcohol beers like that require time to age. So, like an imperial style of beer, like an imperial stout or some of the big Belgian beers, you may brew them. It might take 2 or 3 weeks, but then you age them for 6 months, 12 months, sometimes even longer.
Yeah, you're patient enough to wait for that.
Or you can
for
make...
13%? Two beers and you're gone.
You can get it higher by doing like a freeze distillation where you'll freeze it and remove some of the water content. And that's how, if you read about beers that are 18, 20, 30%, that's pretty much how they get there. Ice box or that way. There's a few different styles of beer that are that way. But it's kind of a process to do that.
Okay, so now when you were walking through how to make beer, the basic instructions, I noticed that there's a lot of gluten, I think. How do you do a gluten-free beer?
Yeah, it sounds like it's mostly gluten.
Yeah, it sounds like you could not. It sounds impossible, yeah. But it is possible. Right?
Absolutely, yeah. Beer is basically bread. It's made with wheat and barley, so it's really high in gluten. And there's a lot of people that really enjoy beer that now have gluten intolerances. You can do that. You can use non-wheat, non-barley ingredients, like
rice beer?
Absolutely. Rice
really?
Is really common. Sorghum, brown rice, millet, quinoa. You can make anything like that. Chestnuts,
quinoa.
Actually. Sugars, honey are all gluten-free. But there's a new enzyme out there called ClarityFirm that actually is designed to break down some of the gluten proteins that cause something called chill haze. And what it actually does is it'll drop in all barley beers the gluten levels below 10 parts per million. Which for most people, that's pretty safe. Everybody has their own tolerance, so I wouldn't say it's safe for everybody. But in practice, with side-by-side batches, it seems to be doing the trick for a lot of people with gluten intolerance. Hmm.
Quinoa beer? Immediately, Nineveh went, ooh, quinoa.
Quinoa.
Because it's so trendy.
That
right
one's so trendy.
All the cool kids are eating.
Yeah, so the quinoa. Tried a quinoa beer? Anyone? No?
No.
Yeah,
I have not.
You don't seem interested at all to try a quinoa beer.
Quinoa, each grain has a different character, whether it's sorghum or quinoa. And so, most people when they make sorghum beers, to make a gluten-free beer, they're expecting to have the same kind of taste as a regular barley beer. And it's not really the same. But hopefully those new enzymes that are out there can help people make an all-barley beer that is gluten-free and doesn't give them any issues or headaches or whatever it might be. And they don't have to deal with trying to find different grains. And in the case of quinoa and millet and buckwheat and all those different grains that you can use, you also have to malt them, which is really difficult for the home brewer.
Okay.
801-359-9696 or 1-877-602-9696 if you want to ask a brewer.
Well, if you're not going to let me have fruit cannon, can I have sorghum? Because that would be a good Dungeons & Dragons name.
Yeah,
character.
That's a scary name.
Sorghum. All right. Let's see. Nanette. Hello, Nanette.
Hi.
Ask a home brewer.
Thanks for letting me listen.
Thank you.
So my boyfriend brews beer, and the batch he just made, a couple of them, actually exploded.
What's he
doing
wrong?
Like Mentos and Coke.
Oh, that...
But only a couple of them.
What
caused that?
It's not venting, right?
No, if it's only a couple of them, probably what happened is when you mixed in the priming sugar, the sugar you're using to carbonate, it may not have mixed into the bottling bucket all the way. So you could have had some bottles with too much sugar and some that don't have enough. And so you might find some flat bottles in there. That's the most common. The other way you see it, typically this would mean more of the bottles are blowing up, is if you use too much priming sugar or if the beer wasn't finished fermenting when you bottled it. If it still is fermenting and then you bottle it and add more sugar in there, it's going to build up enough pressure in those bottles that you make bottle grenades, basically.
Cool.
Bottle grenades.
Did that help, Nanette?
Huh?
Did that help?
Yes, it did.
All right, thank you. Now, when you're venting the beer, is there, as Gina said, is there a distinct aroma? Is it unpleasant? Is it something that the neighbors would notice?
I actually like the smell of it, but my wife doesn't. I keep it in the basement where it's dark and cool. That's usually where you want to ferment beer. And while the gas is coming out, it's very minimal. But if you stick your nose right on top of it, you can kind of smell it. And some people may like it. Some people might.
You rub it on your wrist.
It smells like yeast.
Eau de beer.
You wouldn't like it, Gina.
Eau de beer.
You wouldn't like it at all. All right, Lace. Is it Lacey or Lace?
Lacey.
Lacey, go ahead. Ask a home brewer.
Thanks.
I'm wanting to know what do you do for red beer that makes it the red?
You go to the liquor store and you buy Radio from Hell Red as Hell Ale.
Only $4 for a big old bottle. Yes.
Food dye.
How do you make it red, though? That's
yeah.
There's a few different malts out there that kind of have a red character. Caravien's one of them. Melanoidin is another. Most commonly, you'll take a beer like an amber ale, and you'll add just a little bit of a darker roasted malt, like a chocolate malt or a lighter roasted barley it's kind of dark. You add a little bit of that, and the brown from that combined with the amber color of the beer gives it a red hue. That's the most common way to do it.
And then I also live at 6,000 feet. Is there anything different you have to do if you live at high altitude?
Altitudes,
good question.
No, not at all. The only difference is if you're doing the boil, it's going to take more energy to get the boil going because you're at higher altitude. But
right.
No, you can still do it up there just fine.
See, clearly, Lace, E, you need to call the guys at Salt Lake Brew Supply and ask them these questions.
Do you guys have a website or what is it?
Yeah, it's just saltcitybrewsupply.com. Pretty easy.
Salt City Brew Supply. All right. Let's go to Ryan. Oh, calling from my old homestead, Spanish Fork.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I just got a question. My buddy, a long time ago, back when he was a kid, he like dug basically a cellar in his backyard and put a bunch of apple juice back there. I was just curious if there's anything we could do with it as far as making beer.
Wait, how many years ago was this?
How long ago?
The cellar or the apple juice?
Probably 10 years ago.
So
you want to drink
10-year-old apple juice in someone's backyard right now?
Yeah, well, there's like gallons and gallons of it that he just let sit there for who knows why.
I mean, I'm not an expert, but I'm...
I'd like to point out that I used to live in the Spanish Fork area. I was raised there. I just want to say this is not an uncommon question, all right?
I'm guessing you probably ought not drink it, but...
Doesn't sound safe to me, Ryan.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't think you can do anything with it. Maybe sell it to the army. Maybe they can weaponize it.
Probably vinegar by now.
Yeah, would be my guess.
Salad.
Don't
dress
it. Don't drink it, Ryan.
All right.
God bless you.
He thought he stumbled onto something.
My hometown.
He thought one of you guys was going to say, "You have what? We've been looking for 10-year-old apple juice."
Best let us come take a look at that.
10-year-old apple juice. What can I do with it? I would expect that from my hometown. Now here's one of my legal questions. It's legal to brew beer. We went through all that. 100 gallons per person of drinking age in your home. All that. Why is it that I can't make my own vodka or whiskey?
Yeah, why beer and not that?
Why is beer okay, but my enthusiasm is illegal? Sure.
Well, distilling is it's a federal law, I believe, and they if you have a still, you have to register it, and you can make a certain amount of ethyl alcohol for race fuel. If you end up storing it in oak barrels, I guess they'd probably question that, but.
That's all I had.
There you go.
Distilling is picking up a lot of momentum. We have a lot of people coming through our shop, and we don't sell stills. Some of the stuff we sell is involved in making those kind of things. But I think the reasoning behind it is, when you're making something that's that high of alcohol, 150, 180 proof, and you have some guy in his basement, drunk off moonshine with a burner, and he's pulling this 180 proof stuff off, that stuff's pretty flammable. And if you don't know what you're doing, you could burn your house down. And the first part of the runnings that come out of that is methyl alcohol, which can cause blindness and everything. So you kind of have to know what you're doing. In the end, it's not that much more difficult than brewing beer or wine or cider or
just
whatever.
Just a little
may be.
More dangerous.
Yeah. But you can do some damage.
Oh. So fermentation is safer.
Well, fermentation is part of making. You have to ferment something before you can distill it.
And then you have to distill it. So that's the second step. Because we got to. What's the difference between fermentation and distilling was the question. Mm-hmm. So there you go. All right. Let's see. Let's go to William. Hello, William. Ask a home brewer.
Hi. Thanks for letting me listen.
Go ahead.
Well, I was recently diagnosed with diabetes not too long ago. And ever since then, I've been trying to, Google the answer to figure out how much, the average sugar content was in beer. And I was wondering if you knew, how much sugar was in most beers.
It depends, doesn't it?
Yeah, it depends on a lot of factors. I'm honestly not totally sure. The FDA or whoever it might be doesn't list those kind of labels on most beers for whatever reason. And
So it sounds like he should. If you like beer, I guess you'd want to make your own, right? Right, William?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
We're going to need a gluten-free, sugar-free beer.
Well, I think most
that's
of the
made from quinoa.
Yes.
The caloric intake in the beer is going to be mostly sugars.
Right. Alcohol is basically calories. And like you said, there's still sugar in there. You don't ferment all the sugar out. So beer is fairly high in sugar.
I'm afraid, William, your beer days are over.
All right.
Sorry.
I mean, I've looked on Google a lot, and it's never really given me a straight answer. So
I bet you talked to your doctor about it.
Yeah, your doctor might know.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Okay, there you go.
Thanks, William.
Sorry, William, no more beer for you.
People don't go to the doctor anymore. They just Google.
They Google everything.
I've diagnosed myself with diabetes.
It's WebMD, but at WebMD, I'm telling you.
I love WebMD.
At 3 in the morning, everything is cancer.
I know.
Everything. All right, let's take a break, and we'll go to the lightning round of Ask a Home Brewer. You still have time to get your questions in, 801-359-9696 in Salt Lake, 877-602-9696 from everywhere else. Text your question. Our text number, 53318. Start your question with X96 and then ask it on text. Oh, we're good. We're taking care of it. Hang on. Here we go.
Hey, this is Dan, the laptop man from PC Laptops. It's here, our ultra mega super deluxe crazy blowout sale on the best desktop and laptop computers on the planet. We have demo models, open box, scratch and dents, and new models for up to 50% off the original prices. Got an old clunky computer? No problem. We'll buy it from you and apply it towards your new computer. We'll transfer all your old data for free with our exclusive lifetime service guarantee. That means if you get a virus or spyware or your Windows gets messed up, you're covered 100%. And to make it extra sweet, we're doing zero down, zero interest for a whole year. Whoa, zero down, zero interest for a whole year. OAC. Get in right now before they're all gone. So get into any one of our locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Because at PC Laptops, we really love you.
X96, everything alternative, and radio from hell in the morning. X96.
It's a little more expensive than the dorms, but Aunt Eileen thinks it's like the perfect bachelorette pad. I mean, do you like the poster?
Oh, you know, I've never seen that movie.
Only the show?
Is it the show?
Oh my god, you're not serious. I mean, that's like not being on Facebook.
I'm not on Facebook.
You're so f***ing classy. You know, you're funny. Because you're definitely like a Carrie with like some Samantha aspects and Charlotte hair. It's like a really good combination.
Oh, thank you.
I think I'm definitely a Carrie at heart, but like sometimes Samantha kind of comes out. And then, I mean, when I'm at school, I definitely try and put on my Miranda hat.
Radio from Hell on X96.
Well, put on your Miranda hats, boys.
I think you're mostly Miranda, and that makes me sad.
Why?
I have no idea what they're even talking about.
It's a Sex in the City.
Sex in the City, okay. Hello.
Which one's the cute brunette?
Charlotte.
That's Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah, she's my favorite.
Yeah.
Of course she's dumb.
She is dumb, yeah.
Yeah. But she's pretty.
Yeah.
But she's
Why
dumb.
Why is she dumb?
She's kind of dumb.
Kind of dumb, isn't she?
She's kind of dumb.
Guys, what do you think?
They don't know.
I've never seen the show.
Wait, you have a wife. You don't know what Sex in the City is. You're single, aren't you?
Yeah, I have no idea. That's. Yeah.
You can tell. You can tell.
Talk about beer.
Yes. Lightning round of Ask a Brewer.
Ask a Home Brewer, brought to you by Granite Credit Union. They will help you save money on your auto, RV, or home loan and answer all of your financial questions. Just go to granite.org.
All right. Lightning round. Here we go. Let's go to, let's see. This is Jason. Jason in Ogden. Oh, this is a good question. I've always wondered about this. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for letting me listen.
Thank you.
And Nineveh, you're a beautiful addition to the morning show.
Oh, thank you.
You have fans.
But my question is, what is the long-term storage on beer? I mean, how many years will it last?
I've always wondered that even with commercial beers. You know, how long can you have them in the fridge?
Some beers are better if you let them age. And like I said earlier, the higher alcohol beers, higher gravity beers.
That's something that the guys, the brewers who made our beer, mm-hmm. said, that if you let this sit for 6 months, it'll taste different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So. But then some beers are better drank young, like a Hefeweizen or an IPA. You know, typically those are beers that are best enjoyed young. Big Belgian beers, sour beers, you know, really high alcohol stuff. Now you can age those, you know, 6, 12, 18 months or even more sometimes. And you should be, you know, obviously or ideally cellar temperatures, something like, you know, 50 to 65 degrees is ideal beer storage for long term. But most beer you buy in the grocery store should be drank pretty young and or pretty soon. And you know, big beers you want to enjoy on a cold night, you can age for a while.
Because I'm wondering if people that are just getting into home brewing make all this beer and think, ugh, am I going to drink all this? Or is it going to go bad?
Am I going to share?
Well, see, that was really my question, because when I was a kid, my dad always had one can of beer in the fridge.
Just one?
Just one. And that was in case Elma pissed him off. I need it there just in case your mom pisses me off. And that beer stayed there. Budweiser stayed in that fridge. I don't know how long.
Or he replaced it and you didn't know.
And I didn't know. Maybe he did. I don't know. But I always thought, gee, maybe is that going to go green on him? Is it going to go bad? It's there. Don't make me get that beer.
Thanks, right. Jason.
Thank you. Let's go to Shane. Shane, go ahead. Ask your question.
Hey, guys. Sorry, I was on earlier and forgot to ask a follow-up question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
As far as lager versus ale brewing, what I was asking for was, is it easier for the first-time brewer to do an ale or a lager?
Oh.
Yeah, the homebrewer is much more apt to do an ale just because you can set it anywhere in your house. Most of the time, if you have air conditioning, keep it at 70 degrees. That's where those ferment. If you do a lager, you need a lagering fridge or a really cold storage area in your basement, or do it during the winter time where you can keep that in the, you know,
because the lager is relying on the cold.
Exactly.
So there you go. It sounds like you're in ale territory, sir. All right. We got a few text questions here. Let me see. Do you have some, Gina?
Yeah. I brew and the beer always gives us a headache. What are we doing wrong?
Don't use cheese. You have to use barley and...
You're drinking too much of it. I don't know that there's a really good answer to that. Maybe a scientist has some explanation for why, you know, some alcohols give you a worse headache than others. But from my experience, and I've had quite a few beers in my life, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Sometimes you just wake up and you feel like hell, and sometimes you wake up and you feel like conquering the world. So
how long does it take if someone's just starting out before you make something that tastes good? My guess is there's a whole lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
No, I mean, most people are pretty surprised. Their first bat turns out really good. Sometimes you have to convince them. They come in and be like, oh, you know, what did I do wrong? Does it taste good? And, you know, maybe after hours I'll sample it with them and be like, oh, you know, it tastes good to me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it tastes good, too. You have to convince them that it's good. But, no, most people make pretty good beer right off the bat. And, you know, as you get more comfortable with the process, you'll start to, you know, learn what kinds of beers you like, what kinds of ingredients you like, and you can really start dialing in your beers to exactly what you like, and you can make some really, really good stuff.
Here's my favorite question. If you brew a batch that ends up tasting nasty, do you dump it or power through and drink it anyway?
Power through it.
Power through.
Really?
Can't waste alcohol.
Yeah. Some of the off flavors that come from fermentation will actually go away with time. Others won't. So I usually give them a little bit of time, and if not, power through it.
I'm going to make this taste good.
Give it to your friends to drink PBR. Yep, same thing.
They're gifts.
Oh, now here's our final question regarding the guy who I said shouldn't come out of his house. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, my buddy Jeff that's out of Ogden, he can't get out of his house. He's kind of disabled. So what I'm wondering is, okay, if somebody in this kind of situation wanted to brew beer...
Well, you'd have to go to his house to teach him, is what you're saying. Is this something that Salt City Brew Supply is thinking of implementing, the in-home class?
You know, maybe down the road. It's not on our immediate radar, but, you know, it's not... There's no such thing as an option we can't look at.
All right, Matt.
We are getting an online store up, though, so eventually you can just order online.
Oh, there you go.
There you go, Matt. So you could order online and have it delivered and maybe some sort of, I don't know, video. But right. So what is your website?
www.saltcitybrewsupply.com.
And where's the location? Where are you at?
7200 South and 750 East.
Love that guy. Sounds like he's from Brooklyn.
I want to know how you're kind of disabled.
Well, you know.
Not really disabled.
He can get out of the house. He probably shouldn't be out of the house.
I think that's what it is. We like to keep him in there.
It is Ogden, after all. Thanks, you guys, for coming in.
I appreciate you having us. It's been a lot of fun.
All right.
And I think we might have other beer people coming in today.
What?
I think the Squatters people might be coming in to talk about the beer awards.
The beer awards? Mm-hmm. Oh.
So... It's all beer.
There's local home brewing beer awards, right? My friend Jerry McPhee won some.
Well, there's local awards. Yeah, there's different competitions. The Beehive Brew Off, excuse me, is probably the most prominent local one. But I think the awards they're talking about are national awards.
This is the one they're talking about is the big ones.
They're coming in a little bit.
A lot of the local breweries win a lot of awards nationally. They do a really good job. We're lucky to have them.
All right. Thank you very much.